You're listening to the Setup Podcast, a podcast that helps you navigate new topics in music, tech, and entrepreneurship, with the most disruptive professionals in the music industry turning their experiences working behind the scenes into actionable advice you can use. I'm Sydney.
And I'm Sam.
And we're your hosts for the Setup Podcast.
If you're like us, passionate about paving your own path, hit the subscribe button on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite app, because we'll help set you up for success at the Setup Podcast.
I want to say a quick shout out to our amazing listeners. Truly, I created this podcast to help those who are new to the industry, just like I was once. And I'm very happy to learn that I can also provide insight to those who have been in music for a while. I want to give another shout out to all of our new listeners of the Setup Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome back. I'm Sydney, one half of the Setup. And as always, I'm joined by this girl right here, my twin sister, Sam. If you haven't listened to us before, we provide artists and music professionals with the tools and knowledge to move their careers forward. And for those returning, we owe you one.
Today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at Bandzoogle. Built by musicians for musicians, Bandzoogle is an all-in-one platform that makes it easy to build a beautiful website and EPK for your music. Our listeners can go to bandzoogle.com to try it out for free for 30 days.
So, Sydney, who do we have this week?
We have Jasmine Valencia. She is the president of JV Agency. With artist-focused marketing and a culture-building approach, she has helped advance the careers of top-selling artists like The Killers, Fall Out Boy, Avicii, American Authors, and Shawn Mendes. She has previously spoken at Harvard University, George Washington University, South by Southwest, and the largest and most famous conference on digital marketing in Scandinavia. Today, we are discussing the process of making a promotional plan and the channels that make sense for your next project. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
It's good to see you.
I know, like finally.
Yeah. I met Jazz a couple of weeks ago. We had a clubhouse. And so that's why when I say it's nice to see you, because I heard her before, but I have not seen her before.
Oh yeah. No, I kind of thought so. I mean, everyone's virtual. Like, I mean, now that things are picking back up, but then still, like, I get that.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to meet you. I'm excited.
Yeah. Nice to meet you. Yeah. I'm excited to be on.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us today. We'd love to hear from your perspective, but how did you get into music?
Yeah. So I'm super happy to be here. So I basically started as an intern. I was finishing college and, you know, it's kind of like, everybody's like, good, you know, be an intern to get into the music industry, you know, like when you don't know anybody that works in it. So I applied for an internship. I was kind of looking to see like, oh, where are some of my favorite artists? Like, what are some of the labels that they're on? And I landed up on Island Def Jam. And so I applied, and at the time, you know, I didn't know like what department or anything. I didn't really know like what I wanted to do, or, like what direction. I was just kind of like, this is kind of where I want to be, but I don't really know anything else. So I ended up getting the internship at the time it was called New Media Department, which is now digital marketing. So I got my internship, and then I, you know, like this whole summer internship, it was a great experience. I learned so much. And then I still had like 1 year left of school. So I had to go back home to finish school. But because everything was online, they were like, oh, you can still do stuff for us, which I did, which was great because I was still in school and just like learning, doing all this like real world stuff for these artists. So that was great. And then, yeah, as soon as I finished school, they are like, all right, we're giving you a job, move to New York. They moved me to New York, the whole thing. And then that's kind of how it started. So it was, I was really lucky to have that experience.
That's amazing that they literally, I guess, like moved you to New York and that you still continued with that opportunity. I guess that they were patient too.
What made you move to California then?
So I'll give you a little in between there. So yes. I, you know, officially got a job at Island Def Jam. And then, so I kind of had like, you know, I moved up within the department, and then it was called digital marketing at some point. They figured it out and it wasn't new anymore. So I kind of, you know, was manager, director, et cetera. So by the time I left Island Def Jam, I was like the head of the digital department. And then that's kind of when I transitioned into my agency, because I was at the time, basically Island Def Jam had split up into two different labels, and they had kind of like shuffled the roster around and everything. And a couple of the artists that I had been working with like a long time, they had new teams or new labels, and they were just like, "Hey Jazz, you know, my album's coming out this week and I need help with this. I need a Shazam campaign. I need this." So I was just starting to help out just like as a friend, because I've worked with them for so long that I like wanted them to help them, you know, it was just to help them succeed in their launch. And before I knew it, I was doing that for like 10 or so artists. And then I was like, wait a minute, I can do this kind of like on my own. So that's kind of like what happened. And I decided to leave Island Def Jam and then start a JV agency. And then that's kind of what I've been doing ever since. That was like back in like 2015 or something crazy now to think about.
I know.
Yeah, it's like, where has the time gone? It's so crazy. I started doing that in New York, and then, you know, through meeting people and working with different artists, I started coming out to LA more and more. So at one point I was doing the whole bi-coastal thing, you know, where I was flying here, spending time a week, fly back. You know, I was doing the red eyes, the whole thing. Oh, wow. Back and forth. And then at one point I was like spending more time here in LA than in New York. So it was just like, all right, I guess it makes sense to kind of like be here more than in New York. And I actually just came back from, I was visiting New York for a couple of weeks. I just got back yesterday, and like, I miss New York so much. Like, it made me miss it so much. And like, the people there are so great, and you're just walking and then people are playing music on the street. I don't know, I just miss the energy. Yeah. But here I am in LA, so.
Honestly, that's not a bad problem to have, that you're flying between two like busy, energetic cities, a little bit different energies, but still bigger cities too. Well, duh. We'll probably
at one point it gets to you. Yeah. At one point it gets to you, but like, I know it was fun and I enjoyed it, and it was great to do it at the time, and it was what I needed to do, like with the artists and stuff. So all good, but yeah, definitely miss New York.
I love the topic that we're going to talk about today. Just like looking at your background, and if you had to estimate though, I'm curious, how many different projects have you worked on in your lifetime?
And are we considering a project like an album, or are we considering like different artists?
Yeah, an album.
An album? Probably like over, I would say over 2,000 albums, something crazy like that.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so
yeah.
So you definitely know the promotional process, and from your experience, whether you're working with indie artists or even your experience at the label. And I mean, answers anyway, because I'm actually like, you know, I haven't worked at a label, so I am actually curious, just from your experience, what should an ideal timeline look like?
So, yeah, so this is a tricky question, because, if we're looking from like a label perspective, they want all the time in the world, but the reality of like the artist timeline and the label timeline like don't match up, right? So like the label wanted something yesterday, the artist is like, I'm still tweaking in, and it's going to be like 3 more weeks. so they never really match up. The only time I would say maybe they would match up, if it's like a brand new artist that they're just like so happy to be there, that they're like, you know, the best student in the class, that are like, you know, I'm here, I'm present, you know, sitting front row, and like I have everything ready. I would say that's probably the only time that they really do match up. So now probably there's a lot of independent artists listening to this or watching this. So I would say definitely give yourself a good runway to get all your ducks in a row, especially if you're doing it by yourself and don't have a team of people that can help you out, because then you're going to get overwhelmed with like every little thing that needs to be done. So you need to give yourself as much time as possible. You know, like if we're talking like DSP timelines, like, you know, digital service provider timelines or anything like that, they always say like, you know, 8 to 10 weeks. Now it's like 12 weeks because this year there have been more releases than in the past couple of years. So the more time, the better. So I know it's like a kind of like general answer, but it also depends on how much you have going on. Like if you're an independent artist, but you're working full time, you know, it's like you only have a window to work on your music, then that's a different story for an independent artist that has the whole day to work on their music. So that's why I say like the more time, the better. And it just depends on your like own personal situation.
Yeah.
But if we're giving like a time, like a 12 week window is probably like a safe bet to get all your ducks in a row.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also like the more you can get every piece locked down, the better, not only for the project and just making sure you're not forgetting anything, but also just your mental health. Like, I mean, I don't work with artists, but when I'm thinking about marketing plans, the ones that are usually more successful for the people that I work for are the ones that had time to plan. Because I mean, even when you work with brands too, like they want things like now. And the reality of it is like, you can't get the impact that you need, that you're like wishing for, if you don't give it time to really reach the people that you are targeting, if you will. To give like a better idea of what that looks like, do you have an example of a recent project that you worked on that was successful?
Yeah, so I think a good example is I mean, with COVID, obviously a lot of things, you know, have shifted up in the air. So, but COVID was a good time for a lot of our artists to kind of like stop for a minute and sit down and really think about like what their next year was going to look like with such a big unknown for the whole world. So like one of our artists, she took the time to really work on her actual music. And, you know, before that, she was just kind of like writing something, getting it together, finishing it, and just like putting it out there just to put it out there. With having the time with COVID, is like she took the time to like sit down and really like work on a project. You know, like she did a bunch of songs that she, you know, she ended up releasing an album, and it was just like she took the time, you know, like 6-8 months to get them right. And then within those 6-8 months while she was getting it right, we were still on the other side of it, working on the creative, the brand, like making sure we had the concepts ready as soon as we were able to do photo shoots and film video shoots, as soon as we were able to do these type of things that, you know, we like to do, that we were able to kind of like pull the trigger, and we had the time to plan that, because we, you know, we did that consciously, like, okay, you're going to take the next few weeks to just work on your music, get that 100% that you're comfortable with. And then in the meantime, we're brainstorming and conceptualizing and putting together like visuals and everything, that all the content that we're going to need. You know, like as we know, we need a lot of content once we have a release, especially last year with COVID, that was online releasing content was really our only tool. Right. You know, we made sure to plan that, and we had all kinds of content. We did you know, live versions without an audience, we did stripped down versions, we did like the full music video, we did a little bit of everything just so we have things to like, you know, for our rollout. So it just kind of, yeah, it just depends on, again, like kind of like the team, also obviously budgets, you know, like the budgets that you have to be able to see like how many videos can I afford to film and edit, and how many photo shoots can I do? And, you know, like last year was also a great example of people getting creative. Like I'm sure you saw like people doing iPhone photo shoots, right? Like where the photographer was like taking the, you know, the FaceTime photo, and those, you know, some great content came out of that. So just having like how, you know, how I like to tell artists to start with their like timelines and their projects, is kind of like, if they have a vision already, great. If not, like, let's put it together. You know, it's like, it obviously starts with the music. So like, how many songs are you thinking? Are you thinking a single, 3 singles, an EP, an album, you know, kind of what the concept of the music is first. And then from there, going to like the visuals, and then from the visuals, and once they have like the names and songs and lyrics, then that's where like brainstorming comes about, and like where we can do fun campaigns. You know, like what can we, especially last year, everything was had to be online. So it was like, how can we like get, you know, take advantage of all the tools like Twitch, and, you know, obviously Clubhouse was a big one last year. So it's like, how do we come up with fun marketing promotion ideas with these tools that we have available for free?
I agree with what you're saying too. And how, I guess, how was it for you guys kind of staying within budget, but then also that you had to kind of switch your plan, or the artists had to switch their timelines?
Yeah, one of our artists, we had been planning, she had a summer song. She has a, we haven't released it yet. She has a summer song called Rosé. So that's a very summer song, you know, like out drinking and having fun with your friends. And we had all these plans of like shooting content of people having fun and drinking and, you know, having these like in-person experiences with rosé bottles and, you know, like everything that you can imagine. And we were in the midst of planning that in March of last year. Again, crazy to think about, over a year ago. But we were in the middle of planning all of that. And we were planning to launch it, you know, like the beginning of June. So it's like, and then of course, March, you know, second week of March, whatever that date was, that it was like everything in LA locked down, shut down, no anything. So it's like, okay, well, we don't know how long this is going to last. And it doesn't make sense to even release it with all these unknowns, because we also didn't want, like, it's such a fun summer song that we didn't want it to just like go out into like, you know, the internet. And then like, that's it, because we couldn't do in-person things, or, you know, we couldn't do any of the activations that we had planned. So we pivoted and we're like, okay, what other songs does she have in her catalog that would make sense, you know, because we obviously still want to keep her active, you know, audience, like, you know, engaged. So what other songs do we have that we can release and, you know, maybe like still do things online, but not necessarily all this big stuff that we had planned, you know, for Rosé. So that's what we did. We found another one of her songs that she had it. She liked it, but like we didn't think that was the next, you know, song to release, but we're like, we want to release something. So we did release it, and we just, you know, we did everything online that we could. She performed, you know, Instagram lives, any online virtual thing that we could do, Q&As with fans, basically, you know, like the checklist of all the things that every artist that we all love were doing last year. And we did that. And, you know, it was great to keep her audience engaged and keep her active and keep her in front of, you know, her audience. But without like going down the path of releasing the Rosé song. So, and since we obviously for a long time, we didn't know when we were going to be able to do things again in person, we still had kind of like planning, and we had, you know, we kind of have everything ready to go for as soon as like, we feel like, okay, we have the green light, you know, to like, we'll probably do it now next summer, just since the summer is almost gone and things are, you know, unfortunately, you're not 100% there, or very, you know, not like, not, we're like, we're ready to go as soon as we feel like, okay, this, like things are, we can throw parties again and do everything that we feel safe. And we obviously, we want to make sure everybody's always safe and doesn't feel uncomfortable. So, but we have everything to go. So we took the time also to make sure everything is planned out as much as possible. And then when it's time to be able to pull the trigger and hit the ground running with that song, then we will, you know. So it was a time of a lot of, you know, replanning, and not everything that we want can go our way all the time, which that's just life. You know, this was definitely out of everybody's control what happened. So we were just kind of like hoping for the best and planning as much as possible that what we could plan, and still just like doing everything we can to like engage our audience with, you know, with all of our artists, really.
Wow. Did you guys end up releasing the song?
So not yet, because we were like hoping that we could do it this summer. And when things started, you know, people getting vaccinated, all of that.
Yeah.
We got some news that I can't quite reveal yet, but a big, and everything happens for a reason, a big TV network wants the song for something. So it's spoken for now. And so it kind of worked out in our favor anyway. So,
yeah, I'd say so. So I'd like to know, like, you know, let's just say it's someone's first release. And so they don't know where to start. And so once their music is done and the vision is there, how do you start the process? Do you always start with creating content first?
No, my very first step. Okay. So let's say I have a brand new artist and they're like, here are my songs. They're finished. So the first thing that we do is we kind of listen to the songs together. Like the team and I, everybody listens to the songs, and we kind of start just brainstorming, or like what, like just whatever comes naturally to us. And then we sit down with the artist, and obviously a lot of artists have their own visions and like things that they want to do and things that they want to try. So our first thing that we really do is we like figure out what their goals are for the campaign. So if it's a brand new artist, obviously they just want exposure, but that can be depending on obviously their social following and all of that stuff. That can be from not having even a Spotify. So your monthly listeners on Spotify are zero because you don't even have a Spotify page because you don't have any music out, to even if it's like within the first week, I want to grow my monthly listeners. If you're don't have any following, like to 10 people, and that can just be 10 of your friends, right? So we kind of set goals, attainable, small goals that we know we can help the artist achieve. And we kind of figure out, okay, what are the top three goals that we want to achieve from this campaign? And we kind of like assign kind of like a timeline, a realistic timeline. And also that goes in hand with the budget as well, because some artists have money for advertising and promotions and influencers and all the kind of stuff that we can do online, and some simply don't. So it's kind of like, what resources do we have available for free or that we have to pay for? So those are the kind of things that we start with. You know, we do make a budget. We do make an actual timeline with goals. So it's like, okay, by, you know, we said like, we're going to release it on this day. So on, you know, 2 weeks from that, we'll want to have this, and a month and 3 months and so on and so forth. So that's kind of like our first step, just kind of putting everything, you know, we get, I don't know if you can see here, like our whiteboard is going to kind of put everything laid out on like the whiteboard and just kind of lay it all out in big picture and see how like everything's going to look within, you know, the next 3 months for the artist. So that's like our first step.
What are some typical goals that you usually plan around?
Definitely, goals are, I would say the first one around Spotify, because Spotify is the most important tool for artists right now. So if they are on Spotify, so like growing those numbers by attainable numbers, you know, like, does it make sense to, if you have a profile that's got 0 monthly listeners, to say like, I want to have 1 million listens, you know, like we want to make sure they're realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot for the stars.
Many listeners. Yeah. But you know, we make them something that's attainable and that makes sense for the artist, depending obviously on where they are, you know, currently. So monthly listeners, that also goes for followers on Spotify, followers on whatever social they want to focus on, whether it's on Instagram, TikTok, you know, or Clubhouse even now, or, you know, or even if it's like, I want to release a video and I want it to get, you know, 500,000 views in 2 weeks or whatever it is. So even those numbers, just so hitting like a couple, maybe I would say 3 to 5 number like goals that are like, okay, by this time I want to have X amount of listeners, views, followers, etc. So that's one of the goals. Another one of the goals is like getting performances. So like getting themselves out there. Obviously last year that was a little bit different. It was more virtual performances. But now it's like, okay, I want to play shows. I want to play shows in front of people. So things like that are some of the goals that we make. And then some are, you know, are more like, I want to co-write with this artist, or I want to, you know, I want to get a brand deal. So something like that. And that's for like artists that are a little bit more established or have a little more, you know, something going on that it's like, it makes more sense for those goals to be attainable. Like they're a little bit known.
And on the flip side, for the artists that are coming to you, what would they need in preparation of planning a rollout as well? Like what would their role be in it?
So the main thing that I always ask the artist is, to have some sort of vision. And like, if they don't know what it is, like we kind of help them figure it out. Like we don't want to put like words in their mouths. So like they're the ones writing the lyrics, they're the ones coming up with the music. So they must have some vision in their head of what they want themselves to look like to the public. So that's kind of like what I expect them to kind of like bring to the table, so to speak. Just some sort of vision. And sometimes it's hard for them to like express it. So that's kind of where we come in and help them like, okay, get it out. Even if it's just like, by looking at similar artists, it's like, okay, let's watch this artist. What do you like about this artist that you would want to like represent? You know, or what don't you like about this artist that you were like, I can't have anything to do with that. So that's something that we expect the artist to be able to vocalize, or like we help them vocalize it for if they're not able to. But that's something that they should be prepared to kind of like let us know, because that's really kind of where everything comes out of, like what you want as an artist, what do you want yourself, like for your fans to see at, you know, see you as?
That's interesting. So like what percentage of the artists come to your team, your company, and might not have a vision and might need help to kind of create that plan together?
I would say most artists have a little bit of an idea, but I would say like 90% of them don't really know how to like express it. They just like, they have a vision in their head, but they're not really sure of like even how to go about it. Or like they think they know, but then would like, you know, they'll say like, oh, I wanted to, you know, look like this. And then you show them and it's like, oh, I thought that's what it was, but that's not it. You know, so they don't have a way to express it. So we get that a lot. So I would say most of them like have some of an idea, but they just really need the help to kind of like get it out there. And that's kind of like part of why they come for us, you know, to us for help, because they like, or they've tried to do that themselves and they haven't been successful just because they don't know how to execute things precisely, which is fine, because I think the artist's role should be like focusing on creating the music because that's what they're really good at. And then kind of let us help with everything else.
Yeah, I mean, promotion and marketing is a full-time job in itself. So for most artists these days, like they're not only creating music, they're also expected to be social media gurus, have probably a couple of jobs to have their music be sustainable, and now like be able to be like this marketing professional. So I can understand like where they're going to need help. I'm actually really interested. I know you mentioned creating budgets earlier. How do you create budgets with an artist? And I know it's very different probably depending on where they're at in their career, but I'm sure there's probably like a common area where you prioritize where to spend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it starts with, you know, like assuming let's say it's an independent artist. So it's obviously what they can afford. So most of them don't know where to spend the money. So that's kind of like what we help them with. So if they give us one big figure, we kind of spread it out into, and it depends too, like if the music is done and the bulk of it, you want it to go to your music because you want the music to sound the best, right? But some artists now are very, you know, hands-on where they're doing the producing and the mixing and mastering themselves, where they don't need to pay somebody else to do it. So that will kind of depend on where the budget goes, if we need to hire people to do those things, or if the artist knows how to do it themselves and are happy and good with that. But so it kind of splits, you know, if we were to say, like, I would say split it equally between creating the music, the content to promote the music, and then money for promoting of the music, whether it's advertising or like a marketing campaign specifically. I would kind of split it evenly into those three categories. Obviously, you know, some artists have more than others, so it just kind of depends on the amount, but I would say that's like a reasonable way to start if you're not sure, because you don't want to spend all your money in creating the content and then have nothing to promote it with, because then who's going to listen to it? Who's going to hear it? Mm-hmm. And then in the same sense, you don't want to spend just a little bit creating it and then all your money in advertising and marketing, but then the music's not very good because then you're just kind of throwing money away. So having a good split between those things is kind of like a good way to start. So we sit down and we kind of literally go through line by line of like, you know, and a lot of artists do have like, well, I have a friend who's a photographer and he'll do my photo shoot for free, or like give me the friends and family rates, or, you know, same for a music video or any of those things that an artist would need, or like if they have a show to perform, oh, I can have my friend play for free, or, you know, or just give them, you know, they just want pizza and beer, whatever it is as payment. So going through each of those line items and seeing like, okay, where can we cut costs? Where can we, you know, somebody will do it as a favor or a friends and family rate, and then just kind of like moving those around. So we literally go like line by line of everything that we think that the artist can occur cost in.
Kind of like the transparency in the beginning too. Is this pretty similarly, or is this different, or does it really just vary?
I would say most artists don't know where the money goes or how to spend it, even if they do have it. So that's one of the reasons why, like, I make sure that they do know, because I think it's important for them to like have some sort of idea of what's happening. Even like a lot of artists that, let's say they book a gig at the Troubadour or something. And, you know, you have to promote the show and you get a part of the door. And like, so you have to kind of see, like, if I spend X amount of dollars to promote the show and get people to the show, and then I got X amount of money back, like, was that worth it? You know, like how much did I spend versus how much did I earn to do that one show? So that's something that like a lot of artists don't really know, or even merch. you know, or things like that where they're making money back. Like most artists know, like on Spotify, you're not really making a lot of money. So it's like, okay, all these other things that you're doing, how are you getting your money back? So like, I want to make sure that the artists know that. I just think everybody should know, like, if you want to be a musician, like as your career, you want to do that for a living, you should figure out what are the best ways that you can make them, you know, earn the most income, and where are you spending your money to be able to get that income. You know, being a musician is a little bit different, where like you have to spend money to make money, right? So it's like, how much are you spending in order to make $100? So I want to make sure that the artists do know that. So even when an artist comes to me and they're like, you know, I have $1,000 for this next release. And when I ask the artist, it's like, okay, like what area do you need help in? And most artists say like, I need help in every area. Well, $1,000 is not going to help you. It's not going to help you help in every area, right? So it's like, what is going to get you like the most bang for your buck, if you will? So that's kind of like what we figure out depending on where they are, and et cetera. So that's something that like, I want to make sure that like they understand. It's like, if you do have $1,000, well, where are you going to get the most back out of there? And because then the next $1,000 that you earn, you want to know where you want to spend it also.
As they say, you know, there's an industry term, but ROI, return on investment. And I think you kind of answered my next question, but I'd like to dissect it a little bit, because there are so many channels, especially when we're talking about like the digital marketing aspect of it, you know, YouTube, all the social media channels, like email, website, paid, like all the different routes, like paid advertising, DSP strategies, all that stuff. What channels should someone initially prioritize? Or is it really just like where we can see a return the quickest?
So there's a couple of ways of looking at that. So I definitely think that every artist should have their own website. And that'll be handy for email marketing, because I always tell artists, like, imagine if like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, if they decided to shut their doors down tomorrow, how would you communicate with all those people that follow you? Like, you've wasted, or not wasted, but like you've taken the time to build up this audience and all of a sudden it's gone. Then it would seem like you wasted all this time building up this platform, and then boom, you have no way of reaching those people. So I think every artist should have a website, just so at least there's a way to have that communication. Email marketing, as you know, it's a great tool that I think a lot of artists kind of like forget about and they don't use that much. But you know, it's been working now for like what, 30 years. So it's still here for a reason. So I think that's something that a lot of artists overlook, but and they shouldn't. So I think number one, website, get your email signups going and have that. Not every artist is good at every platform. Some artists are definitely not good at TikTok and should not be on TikTok. And same goes for Instagram and, you know, Twitter. So in every other platform that, you know, like when Clubhouse started, you know, buzzing, like every artist was like messaging me like, should I get in Clubhouse? Can I get an invite? It's like, you don't need to be on there. Like, trust me, I know. So, you know, everybody thinks that they should jump on whatever the next thing is. And that's not necessarily true, because then you're also going to spray yourself too thin. Like we were just saying, like an artist, like they shouldn't have to wear all these hats and like being a social media guru. Like it takes time to build up a platform and dedication. And if you're trying to do them all, well, you're not going to be good at any of them. You're just going to be like, eh, in most of them. So like finding one or two that are like really, that are really easy, comes easy to you as an artist, and that you feel like I can handle this, and you don't feel like there's so much pressure to post, and you don't like overthink the post, and you don't, you know, you're not like obsessing over the likes that you get. And, you know, and a lot of artists do that, and I understand it, and I deal with that every day. But like social media is a tool that we have. It's a free tool for the most part, right? That we have. And as an artist, you should use. So doing something, like being on all platforms, that's probably like a nightmare. If you have a team that can help you, that's great, and repurpose the content for the other platform, that's a whole other story. And you know, that's something that we do. But you as an artist should only pick one or two and really focus on that. You know, I know some artists that don't really use Instagram or you know, Twitter or Facebook, but they just really focus on their Spotify. And just by like sending, and then like they're, because Spotify gives them money, they have a decent Spotify and they get, you know, they get good returns from that. And it's just spending advertising on their Spotify, building their Spotify, but they're not really active on the other platforms. They don't feel the necessity to like make the content and keep posting every day, but that works for them and that doesn't work for everybody. So if you're like, you know, if you're an up and coming artist and you want to be a pop, you know, a pop artist, you know, you have to be on either Instagram or TikTok to like engage that audience. So it just kind of depends, like, you know, your demographics and all of that. But yeah, I think picking one or two that you feel like, okay, I can do this and it's not going to like consume my world, then that's kind of like the sweet spot to focus on.
It's almost like too, especially if they're just starting out, you're learning all of the features of the, you know, the platform. I guess trying to keep your expertise to a couple of them in the beginning, instead of, like you said, trying to learn all these new platforms and then not being consistent and then not engaging, but still trying to maybe keep up, can be a little bit tougher, especially when they're also trying to create music and trying to make money from that as well.
Yeah, it can get very overwhelming for them too, just because they're like, there's so many platforms and there's every day they like change up features. And, you know, like Instagram started as a picture sharing platform and now it's really mm-hmm. a video sharing platform. So now it's like you have to create video content versus photo content, so it's like it's always evolving. So you kind of have to evolve with it, and not everybody can do that or has the resources to do that. So that's why it's also like, yeah, don't put all your eggs in one basket of Instagram and just focus on Instagram, because you know that basket might break. So just knowing what works for you and what resonates with your audience.
And after they get the vision, the branding down, and the content, if we're strictly looking at the promotional aspect of the campaign, like what would that breakout of channels look like? For example, would social media, whether it's having a team do all of them, or the artist to choose one or two, would that be always on, like evergreen? Or how does that stack out in a rollout?
Yeah, so the way we do it with the artist, so let's assume that they have your typical Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, and YouTube whenever they have music videos. So in a rollout, you know, like we use the content that we shot or that we filmed, and we start, you know, like that's kind of like the teasing moment. And again, if it's a brand new artist where like they haven't really posted before, or, you know, they just have like friends and family follow them as like a person, but they don't have music content, it's like kind of like changing the branding into like, okay, here's the start of my project, whatever that project is. And like the branding kind of starts to take over. Where you look at it and you're like, oh, that's an artist, you know. So like I always kind of like tell artists to look at their like Instagram grid, like if I pull it up, and if I don't know, so I'm gonna show you mine, although I'm not an artist, but you'll get what I'm saying. Like if I were to like, I don't know if you can see it, if I were to scroll up past my bio and you just look up like this grid of photos, like are you able to tell that you're an artist without looking at the bio or the name or any of that?
Yeah.
You know, like if you just look at the photos, like it's like would people recognize you as a musician, as an artist, as somebody that's putting out music? And like if, you know, mostly like when they're starting, they look at it and you're like, oh yeah, if I didn't know this person and I just like stumbled upon this and I didn't like read their bio, like I wouldn't know that they're an artist. So that's kind of like how we kind of like take the transition over of the, like, you know, this is your project that's being released into the world. Letting people know, whoever is following you, that you are an artist. If somebody stumbles upon your profile, like, oh, this looks like a cool artist, like I'm going to listen to them, you know? So that's kind of like the transition. And, you know, obviously Instagram is very visual, but that can go along the, and, you know, on Facebook, what you're posting, like, are you posting, you know, memes and like being silly, or are you talking about your music? You know, are you talking about your writing process? Are you talking about the lyrics? You know, and same for Twitter, right? So it's kind of like what you're putting out for the world to see, like does that show and reflect how you are as an artist and what your project's about?
I mean, after doing that, a new single is being released, like the Rosé song, would you start teasing on socials? Would you release, I don't know, video teasers on YouTube? How would that look?
Yeah. So depending on artists. So yeah. So like socials are, it's pretty the standard for all the artists now, right? Like everybody has socials, and that's like the first like platform to kind of let the world know that there's music coming. So definitely on socials, and then, you know, on YouTube too, but also it's sometimes partnering up with a blog or an outlet, or like using, doing an Instagram takeover with somebody else. And that's how you announce it. And then it's like, okay, go to my page and get all the details there, or something along those lines. Or like, I'm going to, you know, at midnight after the takeover, I'm going to post on my Instagram page, I'm going to post the cover, or like, I'm going to reveal it, you know, the single cover, or I'm going to release a snippet, or you're doing an Instagram live and you're like, okay, guys, I'm going to show you a little quick peek behind, you know, of the video before it's out anywhere. So doing those little teasers like that, that you'll know will resonate with your audience. That's kind of how we started. Mm-hmm. And yeah, depending on the artist, it's like either do like a whole rebrand of their pages, because, and also it might be like they changed their look, they changed their appearance. You know, this is a completely different direction from the last release. So they want to make sure that's also clearly represented within the visuals. And so that's what we like use under socials and YouTube and any other channel that they have. While we kind of like start building it up. And then we also start building it up to like, if we have the pre-save link, it's like, that's kind of like the moment we announce it. It's like, okay, my song's available for pre-sale, like, and then, you know, tune in tomorrow and we'll do like, I'll play you a snippet, or like send like a disappearing DM with a little bit of the song. So like, you know, the super fans can hear of it first and things like that.
I think that makes sense. Giving little,
I love that.
Yeah, giving little snippets of the campaign to just keep the interest going, especially with people like, well, people that are excited or interested or even trying to grab just new listeners' attention. When do you know, or how can you, I guess, have that conversation with the artist if one platform, one social media platform is not working, or not, I guess you're not, or the artist is not hitting those milestones that you guys, you know, or the goals that you guys planned in the beginning?
Yeah, it's really, if that's the case, it's an ongoing conversation, because we do like, you know, we do weekly, bi-weekly check-ins of how like things are going. So like, it would never take an artist by surprise if it's not going the right way, because they would have known along the way. Yeah. It's not like, surprise, 2 months later, we didn't get that.
Yeah. Like, so, yeah, let's wait it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and most of the time, if that's the case, like the artist is well aware of it, because they're not kind of delivering on their side of things. Cause most of the artists, like, you know, let's say, assuming posting on social media, like it has to come from them. Like we can like write out copy, like send suggestions, but we never like take the place of the artist. It's always like they say it, and we just kind of help them get it to like the format that it needs to be, you know, for whatever platform. So they'll know like, oh, I was late, I didn't send you this, or like, I was supposed to give you notes on that edit and I didn't, so now we're a couple of days behind, or I was late for this interview, you know, like whatever the keys might be, like they kind of already know, that it's like, you know, and like we can remind them of things and we can follow up and things, but at the end of the day, it's really on them to come through as well. Like they want to want this as much as we want them to succeed, you know, because then it's like, we don't want to waste our time if they're not there 100%. So it's really a partnership. It's like, I'm showing up and delivering, like you need to show up too, you know? So it's kind of like everybody needs to put in the work, just because you have it. And this goes for any artist, just because you have a team doesn't mean you can like sit back and let everybody else do the work. Or it's not like, oh, here's my song, I'm going to like relax and let you guys do everything. You still have to do the work, no matter what level of, you know, your career you're at. You know, like I was just talking about, J-Lo, she's like 52 years old and she did a Global Citizen Festival. She had like a 10 minute song, like probably 10 minutes. It wasn't longer than that. It was like a medley, 10 minutes. And the woman rehearsed for 3.5 weeks with her dancers for a 10 minute set. And she was flawless, of course. But she's at the level that obviously she doesn't have to do these things, right? But she puts in the work. She got up at 7 a.m. She was at the rehearsal, rehearsing from 7 a.m. until like whatever time, you know, like every day for 3.5 weeks straight to get it perfect down to a T and no mistakes. And she does this every day. And like, so she's putting in the hard work and she's at an amazing career level. Obviously she's like superwoman over there doing everything. But she's still putting in the hard work. So that, you know, if you're an up and coming artist, you should be doing the same, if not more, because you need to tell the world who you are. So it's just kind of about putting in the work. It has to come from every side.
Yes, that really gives you perspective.
and accountability for sure. Like making sure that everybody knows their part and that, you know, if there isn't, there's always going to be a relationship or partnership and some kind of reliance. So you guys can't do your job unless they're doing something to help feed that. And I think that's completely fair.
After doing this as long as you have, what are some consistent things that picked up along the way that can help make a rollout a little bit more efficient and effective?
Yeah, so I definitely have picked up the artists that are organized, or the ones that are not organized but know to ask for help, are the ones that are, you know, like have very successful results. And like, it's okay if you're not organized. Like, I don't expect an artist to be. And when I say organized, I mean, like, if you give me a file and it's not complete, or if like you don't give me all the writers, or, you know, things like that, like that are going to be really important at the end of the day. But like, we can help you if you don't know how to do that. But yeah, definitely being organized or asking for help when you're not, making sure to speak up if something's bothering you. Some artists like to kind of like hold it all in and then just explode, and that's never healthy. Instead of saying like, you know, I did this interview and I didn't like how I answered this, can you help me? And like coming up with a better answer, you know, something as simple as that, rather than holding it up after doing 10 interviews and then being like, oh, you know, I don't know how to answer this, you know, or something like that. So always having like that, you know, being comfortable that you can ask for help when you need it. I think that's like the main key. Like, you know, I think artists are very creative, and that's what like sometimes the business side of it seems just like, like I don't know where to start. So that's also a common factor that we've seen. So that's why like having a team that you trust and that you can have communication with and that you like can rely on, you know, that's super helpful for like a successful campaign. Also knowing like not every artist is at a level where they do need a team. So knowing when you need that team to come in and help, like step in and help things off your plate, that's super helpful. Because sometimes come too early, you know, the artists come too early for help. And then there's like, well, you're not at the level where you need a whole team doing this. Like you should be doing all these things because you have the bandwidth to do it. When it gets to the point that you don't have the bandwidth, then that's when you need the help of a team. And then I would say to just like being open to suggestions, you know, like if you like, you know, again, like artists are creative, so they don't know like everything on the business or marketing side. So just like being open, like listening to the people that are like, you know, they have your best interests. Like if the artist wins, we win. So it's kind of like, that's how we work. So being open to suggestions is always key to like having a successful, you know, project or launch.
Awesome. And I do like how your answers are like kind of helping like the artist, because I'm sure that, I mean, from what you're seeing, I'm sure that this is probably a lot of them, how they feel like it's either overwhelming, or they don't know how to bring it up, or honestly, communication is key that a lot of us could probably work on. I mean, it's true. Like even, you know, holding things in, then all of a sudden you're like, I can't anymore. Just from thinking back just on your career, what would you say has been one of the most interesting or one of the bigger highlights that you could recall?
Ooh, well, like if you're talking project wise, I did a project a few years ago that is like one of the ones that I like is still one of my favorites. So it's for the band American Authors. And you might have heard their song Best Day of My Life, because it's played everywhere, even till this day. There's not a store I walk into that they don't play it. But when that song came, well, it was about to come out. You know, they were a band that didn't have a big budget, so we needed a visual for it. So we needed a video. So literally, I think it ended up costing me like, I don't know, $3,000, something like very small. Mm-hmm. And it's the music video. I don't know if you've seen it, where they shows a day in the life of an English bulldog, and you know, he's having fun, he's going to the park, he's playing, all this stuff. And then at the end of the video, it shows that it's the best day of his life because it's the day he got adopted. So what was really cool about this campaign is that, you know, I partner up with the Animal Association for, Shelter Association, and then with WAG, which is like a dog company. And so not only did it help the band like get awareness for the song and promote the song, but we like raised so much money and awareness about shelters and adoptions. And what was really cool and to kind of help the band kind of get to a next level is that the radio stations that started playing the song, most of the program directors love dogs and have dogs. So of course they loved it. And then, but not only that, they started doing like local events with the local shelters, and they would do events where like the shelter, you know, like adopt animals. So just kind of, it was more of like a social element to it. That was like one of the first, and this is a while back ago, but it's one of the first campaigns that I did that had a social element that involved like a charity and giving back. And that was really fun for me. Like, I really enjoyed that. And the, you know, the video went viral. It was on BuzzFeed and, you know, like the homepage, all that kind of stuff. So it was like a really great campaign that, you know, it was helping a cause, but obviously still helped the band. And yeah, until this day, this is still one of their most played songs, one of the most successful songs. Like I said, every time I walk into it, I was traveling, like I said, a couple of weeks ago, and I literally walk into like the grocery store and like, best day of my life on the speaker, right? Here we go. And it happens every time I walk into a random store. It's the funniest thing.
That's amazing. Well, one, I need to listen to this song probably right after this. I'm going to listen to it. And then two, how did that idea come up for it?
So I am a big animal lover, if you can't tell. So I don't know. I heard the song Best Day of My Life, and I actually called up a friend of mine who made videos. Again, this is like we're calling in friends and stuff because we didn't have a big budget. I called up a friend of mine, Joshua, and then I was like, hey, I have the song and I kind of have this idea, but I don't know. So we kind of like talked it out, and then And then at the time I was looking at dogs, of course. And then I was like, what if we get a dog? And he's like, how are we going to get a dog to act? And I was like, I don't know. Like, so I just kind of like went back and forth. And then we actually found the dog was from, a shelter in Georgia, like Georgia Bulldogs, you know, they're big over there. So we reached out to the shelter and they're like, hey, we want to do this music video. Like, do you have any dogs that you think would be good? And then she had a suggestion, like, lady name and stuff. She was great. And so she lends us the dog. So it was like a whole thing of just like brainstorming and coming up with the idea. And then like, once we had like the treatment down and like made it like, you know, like, it, you know, it's have so happy because, you know, like he got adopted. So it's like, okay, so how can we tie in like organizations to kind of like promote awareness that you should, you know, adopt a dog and all these things. And then that kind of led to another. And then I found the company WAG, which at the time it was like a brand new startup. It's a huge company now. But they also took the chance on like, you know, like working with us. It was like a brand new artist that they never heard of, but they take the chance and they're like, yeah, we'll, you know, we'll match the donations and we'll help promote the video. And then that's kind of like one thing led to another. And it was just about reaching out and just saying like, hey, we have this great song, this concept, like, do you want to be a part of it? So it was a lot of just like outreaching, and it just, you know, it just kind of happened. And it turned out to be a great video.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's so, I mean, and it's always great to pair with like a good cause or some kind of charity.
Yeah.
That really brings people's emotions.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's something that I actually have done ever since with all my projects and all my artists. I like the first thing that I actually do tell them is like, think about what cause or organization you want to like associate yourself with. And you know, like, well, yes, we use it for promotion of the music. It's still at the same time, we're like doing something to give back somehow to the community, whatever that cause or organization it is, which is, it's really great. And like along the way, you know, we've worked with great foundations like Born This Way from Lady Gaga, you know, like there's all these artists that have great ones, but as up and coming artists, it's good to associate yourself with either a cause or an existing charity just to give back, if anything, you know, even if nothing comes out of it from, you know, with your music, but just to give back. I think that's something that's been a part of our marketing timeline that we do, but we don't really talk about much. But yeah, just to know that's always an option.
And I think that's smart. And it's so funny. As you were like going through this, I like, sometimes I take notes like during it. I'm like, what a good, I literally wrote, I'm like, artist with good causes or charities. I'm like, genius. Just like jotting down some of this. Lastly, what do you want to be known for?
Well, I think one of the things that I do now is I am very focused on women empowerment, and I help young females that want to be in the music industry specifically kind of like get out there and just figure out who they want to be and who they want to become. So I'm hoping I'm helping the future leaders, you know, if not the music industry of something, you know, so that whatever they end up doing with their lives in the long run. So I think I want to be known just for somebody who helped out other females, just kind of like paved the way, you know, like when I started, I was like, you know, one of the few females at the label, and especially I was also very young in comparison to everybody else. So that's something that like I've taken upon myself to, like within JV Agency too, like we have mentorship programs, you know, I have intern programs that I want to like help people kind of like get their foot in the door. You know, like when I started in the music industry, I didn't know anybody in the industry, and a lot of people are still currently that way. So, you know, like I can help you, you know, just get your foot in the door and, you know, to figure out what you want to do. So that's sort of the programs that we do now, like mentorship programs that have been really successful. You know, like all of our interns that have come through us, they like now have like great jobs that they love and are working in the music industry or film industry. You know, and I get notes. I actually met up with an intern when I was in New York this past week, and like she gave me such a nice note. She was like, "Thank you so much for everything. Now I have like a really good job." Like it was super sweet to hear those things. So like, yeah, I hope I can kind of like pave the way for the future female leaders in the music industry.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. So outside of your organization, are you part of any groups, like digital groups that any of our viewers can potentially join? That would be kind of like women empowerment.
Yeah. There's one called Girls Behind the Rock Show. I think they do great things for women that want to be in the music industry and help you like get foot in the door. Like they do connections, and like I a lot of the females that I meet is from that group and from all over the States and even the world. There's like, and it's a good place that there's no judgment. You can ask any kind of questions. We had all kinds of questions that people are like scared to ask, whether it's like how to ask for compensation, like if they're going for an interview, you know, like things that people are usually afraid to talk about, like especially finances. You know, like I am happy to answer, like, I'm not an investor, but, or like have any of that, like, things that you have to like give investment advice. But like people have questions about like, oh, should I do like this? And it's like, if I know the answer, I'm happy to help. But a lot of people I found are like shy to even ask, or even they don't know how to like negotiate their salary, or like, you know, what to ask for when like going for a job interview, when they ask for, you know, this kind of thing. So that's a group that's like very helpful for that kind of information if you're like just starting out and you don't know where to go.
Very cool. I definitely feel like a lot of just younger females, even older too. I feel like, I don't know, throughout our careers, it almost feels like that if we do ask for something, it might seem aggressive or too assertive, and all these different personalities that shouldn't even be part of the decision making or part of like the judgment.
Awesome. Thank you.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks so much, Jazz, for joining us on this episode. It was such a pleasure to talk through the promo plans and also just learn a little bit about you and JV Agency.
Thank you. This was so much fun. I had a blast. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Setup Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please review the Setup on Apple Podcasts. And I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and colleagues. If you have any topic recommendations or questions, please visit us at www.thesetupseries.com.